The rabbit hole went straight on like a tunnel for some way, and then dipped suddenly down. So suddenly that Alice had not a moment to think about stopping herself before she found herself falling down what seemed to be a very deep well. Either the well was very deep, or she fell very slowly, for she had plenty of time as she went down to look about her and to wonder what was going to happen next.
Scare anyone, but I'm gonna give it to you straight about Jason. His body was never recovered from the lake after he drowned. And if you listen to the old timers in town, they'll tell you he's still out there.
Camp Crystal Lake is jinxed.
Got a death curse.
Some folks claim they've even seen him right in this area.
Who's that? Oh, hi. What are you doing out in this mess?
The girl who survived that night at Camp Blood, that Friday the 13th, she claimed she saw him.
Boy, is he dead too?
Legend has it that Jason saw his mother beheaded that night. And he took his revenge. A revenge that he'll continue to seek if anyone ever enters his wilderness again.
Jason was my son, and today is his birthday.
We'll be right back.
Do you believe in the boogeyman?
Rumor Radio. The world's original all-horror broadcast.
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell.
Yeah!
Good evening.
I'm your host, Tomb Dragomir.
This wonder his mind isn't fried with all the drugs I've given him.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Did you know that a young boy drowned the year before those two others were killed? The counselors weren't paying any attention. They were making love while that young boy drowned.
This week on the broadcast.
I like, you know, digging a furrow that is different than everybody else's. If everybody's walking left, I go right, just for the sake of seeing what's that direction.
Director of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Time Bandits, and now Tideland.
What the fuck are you doing? How many times do I have to tell you to stay away from my chocolate, you little bitch?
The legendary Terry Gilliam joins us. Also, the caustic critics lash out against erroneous Hollywood prequels, this time Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning is the biggest, stinkiest piece of lifeless, plotless, pointless, perfunctory dog vomit.
Stay tuned for tunes from Hank Williams III, The Residents, another dead junkie in tribute to Fulci. And this here, Zombina and the Skeletones, punk rock vampires, on Rumorg Radio, hey-ho, let's go!
Punk rock vampires, I go!
Right in the middle of a fucking reptile zoo. And somebody was giving booze to these goddamn things. It won't be long now before they tear us to shreds.
Thank you. Alex from Massachusetts, and you're listening to Room Org Radio.
All right, just stop the f***ing spitting.
All right, so first of all, what's with the name? Now, do you consider yourself a horror novelist?
What is the state of the Church of Satan?
Exactly, how did this collaboration come about? What does horror mean to you? Continue.
I speak nothing but the fucking English language. And if that's infamous, then
tough titters.
This is Feedback, and this week my guest is none other than the legendary filmmaker, one of my all-time personal favourite filmmakers, Terry Gilliam. I caught up with him here in Toronto while he was doing press for his latest feature, Tideland, which is adapted from the novel by Mitch Cullen. It tells the tale of a young girl who's abandoned in a rural farmhouse following the death of her junkie parents, and she's forced to fend for herself, and in doing so, ends up sinking into a delusional fantasy world of her own design. It's not a horror film per se, but it's definitely filled with enough out and out morbidity to appeal to the sensibilities of a wide array of horror fanatics. So without any further fuss, here it is, my interview with the only American member of Monty Python, Mr. Terry Gilliam.
There's an area that you constantly return to in your films, and it's that strange, delusional realm where harsh reality and all-out fantasy intersect. So what is it about that area that keeps drawing you back?
Partly because I think that's life. It's my version of what life should be about, dancing in the borderland. And I never know where the line is. So I suppose the films allow me a chance to roam down that area and try to see where one intersects with the other. There's no plan. I just have never been able to make a film that's totally realistic, or I can't stand the idea of making a film that's totally fantastical either. And so that's the area I work. I don't think there's many other people working it as well. I like digging a furrow that is different than everybody else's. If everybody's walking left, I go right, just for the sake of seeing what's that direction.
And I guess this sort of realm we're talking about is probably most fully explored with this new film, Tideland. Mm. So what was it about the novel that first attracted you to?
Well, here you have a child put into what, you know, adults consider very dark, dangerous, disturbing, unpleasant situations, and the child doesn't necessarily see it that way, and that intrigues me. It has a lot to do with, the loss of childhood has always probably bothered me, because as a child, the world is unformed and it's really exciting. Every day is something new and wonderful, and magic is possible, wonders are possible. And as you get older, it all closes in. We know too much, we experience too much, and the world becomes, to me, more and more predictable and more boring. And I suppose the book was a chance for me to be a child again, to make a film, and I always identify with the main characters, so I got to play with dolls this time. I didn't the first time around.
Jeff Bridges and Jennifer Tilly play a couple of the most disastrous parents I've seen in film in a long time, and yet they're still really likable, and you can't help but find them endearing.
Yeah.
So what is it about them that, despite how horrific they are as parents, we still like them?
Well, part of it, it was interesting when I read the book and thought I'd like to make a film of this. The first person I thought of for the junkie, failed rock and roller, despondent, dreamy parent was Jeff, because he's a bit of an asshole. He's selfish. He's just caught up in his own nightmare, and yet his daughter loves him, and I felt the audience has to love him like she loves him.
Not too long this time, Daddy.
Oh, no. Just a little vacation. Daddy's going deep sea diving. The only place your dreams are made.
And with Jennifer, she's just like, she's absolutely a monster.
It's your daddy's fault you're the way you are, not mine. Because I loved you. Lip smacking little chunky baby. Irritable and hyperactive you was, just twitching and spasms and convulsions. Your daddy blew smoke in your face to keep you quiet, you know that? I breastfed you forever.
But she's so wonderful. When we create a bad or awful, monstrous character, I feel I've got to love them as well as hate them. So there's always that mixture in them, and I try to bring that out. I can't stand the world where everybody's the bad guy and the good guy. This simplistic world that everybody seems to believe exists, I think, is a bad joke. There's good and bad in everybody, and I always want to see that. I actually want to sympathize with my characters, no matter how twisted and awful they may be. I want to at least feel for them and understand that, you know, there's a human being in there.
His character spends most of the film in a posthumous state.
Yes.
So what was it like for Jeff Bridges to walk on the set and see that, I'm assuming he got to see it, that cadaver made from his likeness?
Oh, Jeff loves that. That cadaver is in his garden at the moment. That was the deal, he said, when he saw that. Okay, I want that.
So it wasn't like some chilling moments of mortality.
Jeff, see, for people don't... Jeff always seems to be such a nice, calm, gentle person. He introduced me to some of the weirdest stuff. There's a photographer named Joel Peter Witkin. I don't know if you know. Okay, you know who I'm talking about. What I'm talking about. The first time I met Jeff when we were about to do Fisher King, I was over at his house and we had a nice drink and everything, and he says, "Terry, you know this?" And he shows me this book, and I open the book and I fell into the abyss. I mean, it was grotesque, horrifying, beautiful. Suddenly everything you think you understand about life in the world is pulled out from underneath you and you drop. And I said, "Hello." And I thought, "Well, Jeff, aren't you an interesting character?"
Standing along that melancholy tide land.
I also read that you gave up your American citizenship.
Yeah,
you know, why did that happen? I didn't even know it was possible to do that.
Oh, it's not as easy as you'd think. This next year I'll have lived in England for 40 years, and it's kind of, I thought, I'm going to simplify my life. I'm paying taxes in both countries. It's just more complicated. Having done it, I'm on probation for 10 years. I can only go back to America 30 days a year. They don't like you leaving, especially when you're a taxpayer.
So it was purely financial and pragmatic. It wasn't in any way a political.
Well, my whole leaving of America was political, and having stayed in England is political. And you know, and I was actually saying, because I was promoting the film last week in America, I've come back, and I'm considering suing George Bush, Dick Cheney, and that gang for the illegal and unauthorized remake of Brazil. Brazil, the reality, is where America lives now.
Lieutenant, hey, somebody called for you.
Yeah, who?
Guy with a strange voice. He said he called back. Sounded just like a duck.
Symphony of Fear. It's another Dead Junkie New York, one more day. You're listening to Remark Radio.
I didn't quite hear that.
I said, how long was Mr. Loomis here that evening?
I don't know.
Come now, Mr. Marsh. You must be able to hazard a guess. How long was Mr. Loomis here that evening?
Ten minutes.
Come now, you must remember what you spoke about. Did anyone see him leave here? Mr. Marsh, I insist that you answer my question.
Mr. Marsh! You know, don't you? You know! You can hear it, can't you? You can hear it!
Hear what?
The beating of his heart! The beating of his infernal heart!
No effects.
When they tightly strap me in, give me lethal injection. Just a few moments to live. No remorse for what I did. It's for the betterment of man. I gave the utmost sacrifice. Before more damage could be done, I took his life. There was a split second of silence when the dart punctured the skin. PDI rope banging head, body drop from the poison. They could incapacitate me, but could not erase my sin. I heard a thousand people screaming while 3 billion others cheered. He was gone, and I would soon be executed by the state. All appeals would be in vain. I was not criminally insane. In fact, I was found to be an otherwise caring and respectable member of society. A minor threat, except for that one that I killed. As the sedatives take effect, I just smile and close my eyes. There's a priest kneeling next to me. He asked me if I realized I was going straight to hell. And he thought that I should know that the man I killed to placement planned this whole scenario. And what I did had no significance at all.
Buried in there. But his heart keeps beating. I can't stop his heart from beating. I can't stop his heart from beating.
The residence.
Vicinity of the pit area. Any travelers who might be headed toward that distant region are encouraged to delay further plans until this storm has passed.
Hello, this is Maggot Brain from the Rue Mortuary at the 2006
Festival of Fear, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
Shh, don't cry. Don't cry. Shh. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch beautiful like me.
Controversial, unrelenting, it's brutal, it's nasty.
Sensational.
This guy is willing to go five rounds with his naysayers, for crying out loud.
Balding, balding, balding.
They're real.
Holy fuck.
They're mean.
So what was the actor's name?
Oh, God, what a plank he is.
They're here.
Are you ready? It's time for the Caustic Critics. They're here.
This is Chris Alexander.
He ain't retarded. He's misunderstood.
And this is Feedback, and this week we're here to talk about a horrible little title currently polluting screens all over North America, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning.
That slaughterhouse meant more to this town than them fools will ever know. It's just a matter of time now before this town's overrun by bikers and hippies. Us, we're staying right here.
The prequel that is a sequel to the remake of an original, which makes it quite difficult to get any real perspective on this, especially considering that I've never seen the remake, for the simple fact that I consider Texas Chainsaw Massacre to be a true American horror masterpiece. It's as important to the history of American cinema as it is to the genre. It's one of the first real modern American horror movies, and the idea of a remake of that seems to be completely artistically invalid. That said, I mean, one of the great things about TCM was the family, and you wonder, what do they do when they're not torturing teenagers? How did they get to be so fucked up? These are some of the wonderful areas that perhaps a prequel could have explored. Unfortunately, this film fails to take advantage of any of that, and in fact offers up just a very obvious and pedestrian plot of four teenagers who run afoul of Sheriff Hoyt and Leatherface and proceed to get tortured and dispatched for the next 90 minutes of screen time.
What was that? Did y'all see that? Oh,
this film telegraphs its plot points from fucking miles away.
People may not remember what we say here tonight. They sure gonna remember what we do.
Which is in direct contrast to the original Texas Chainsaw, which succeeds above anything else for its ability to constantly undermine audience expectations. And that's one of the really ballsy things about that movie, and the reason it feels like such an unending nightmare. This film, it tries to be dark, it tries to be nasty, but from a narrative point of view, it's very timid, and certainly from an imaginative point of view, it's an absolute weakling.
Just get on home now, okay? You gotta go, I said. You gotta get the hell out of here, you dumb animal.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, is the biggest, stinkiest piece of lifeless, plotless, pointless, perfunctory dog vomit that I've seen in the genre.
That's the ugliest thing I ever saw.
Corporately designed crap is what it is. Now listen, first of all, I have seen the remake, and I thought that was pretty dire to begin with, because not because it was a bad film, but because it didn't stray from the formula, except for introducing R. Lee Ermey in his typical drill sergeant role. Doing it well, mind you. But regardless, the remake was
pretty much scene for scene the same goddamn movie. Do we need it? No, because all they did is gloss it up, shine it up, and make it clean and pretty, which is the biggest complaint I had about the high-definition transfer of Hooper's original is that it's too clean. So now here we have the sequel, which aims to kind of rectify a lot of the... A, there wasn't any cannibalism in the remake, so this one's got a lot of cannibalism. But it's a prequel. Now, first of all, why do we need a prequel? Why do we have to explain these beasts? Why do they have to have a purpose? That's what makes the original so great, is that they don't. They just appear. They are what they are, right? This is a bullshit movie designed in a fucking boardroom to exploit all the wrong turns and the Hills Have Eyes and the fucking high tensions of the world that are making a lot of money these days. It's cheap, it's gory, it's violent, it's fucking useless on every level. I thought it was boring, and for a movie with so much mayhem,
I'm afraid you would.
The movie itself is so, you know, snoozy.
I'll tell you the thing that bothered me the most, more than anything else. There's a character in the movie who's a draft dodger, and he claims to be not going to the Vietnam War for political reasons, but he's accused of being cowardly. And in fact, he is cowardly. And one of his character arcs is basically to find his balls. And I thought that was like one
fucking
of the most
ridiculous,
hideous. Reactionary perspectives of this film could take.
It has no fucking
point. Propagating some sort of support your troops pro-Iraq
war
mentality.
It's so obvious and planted.
Listen, if you want to see 90 minutes of cruel torture and a completely moronic, idiotic plot, then...
Rent a Takashi Miike film, because at least you'll get some style out of it.
No, rent See No Evil, the Kane movie that came out earlier this year.
That's true.
Which is infinitely superior to Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning.
It looks like fucking the Battleship Potemkin compared to this pile of crap. To me, this is honestly my vote for worst film of the year of any genre.
All right, well, until next week, this is Feedback.
And this is Arlie Ermey, Feedback. Drop a gimme 50, sound off like you got a pair. Are you a penis pupper, are you? Feedback and Leatherface laying in bed. Feedback rolled over, this is what he said. Feels good, real good. Hey, stop eating them. Put that Twinkie down.
Hank
3. Ruby, get back to the hills.
Ruby, stop. You're gonna get me no goddamn shit.
This is where you belong.
It's
the edge of the world. If I shut my eyes, maybe I'll wake inside your dream.
Chocolate, you little bitch.
Damn right.